Live from Orlando, Florida. Boy, another terrorist attack. Donald Trump in the Middle East. A lot to talk about. Also, you've got questions. We've got answers. We'll do it all today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The whole House of Representatives extends its condolences to the families and the victims. Our prayers are especially with those who are still searching for their children. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a father of teenagers, but that is the part that keeps me coming back to this. To deliberately target innocent children is cowardice in its most heinous form. So we should not be surprised that ISIS has claimed responsibility for this attack. But we will never bow or bend to radical Islamic terror.
This is Michael Brown. That was the voice of House Speaker Paul Ryan speaking about the horrific terrorist attack that took place in Manchester, England yesterday. Every one of these terrorist attacks is ghastly, is ugly, is horrific, is despicable, is inexcusable. But when the bomber targets children, it makes it even more heinous. An Islamic suicide bomber, apparently born and bred in England, which reminds us we're not just dealing with people coming from the outside who want to destroy. We're talking about an ideology that affects those who are within, which is why we must fight not just the terrorists, but the ideology. All right, friends, we do have a lot to talk about today, but I also want to open up the phones for anything you want to talk about. I've got a few things I'm going to get through, and then I'm going to open up the phones, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm in Orlando, Florida right now. After the show, I'll be flying up to D.C. and then speaking at a Watchman on the Wall pastor's conference for Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council, also doing live radio from D.C. But on the Friday broadcast, I'm just going to be answering your email questions. So today, I want to open up the phones a little later in the broadcast for any question of any kind, anything you want to talk to me about, I'd be glad to do so. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. So all this happens, this horrific terrorist attack in Manchester, while President Trump is in the Middle East. And even some of his critics are saying, well, yeah, he's doing a good job here in the speeches he's making and the people he's meeting with. Certainly, he's made more than his share of mistakes here in the States. And certainly, the way he conducts himself on Twitter is different than the way he is conducting himself meeting with these international leaders. And I think that most of us recognize if he'd conduct himself like that all the time, that he'd have less trouble. At the same time, we recognize the degree to which the liberal media is coming against him and is attacking him savagely day and night over and above any mistakes he makes or things he does that deserve criticism. And this trip reminds us that he can be a statesman and he can carry clout. And Prime Minister Netanyahu has even said that he's got more hope now for peace than what, in his lifetime or in his memory? And it's because he sees America taking strong leadership again in the Middle East. We shall see. We shall see where things go. But this is a time to call on all Muslim nations to categorically not just renounce terrorist acts like this, but to renounce the ideology and to say to the extent our teaching, our doctrine, our beliefs have contributed to this, we must make changes. That's what the president of Egypt did, President al-Sisi. That's what he called for in a major speech at Cairo University before Islamic leaders, saying we must bring about reform in our religion. A lot to talk about. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown here, coming your way live from Orlando, 866-348-7884. I've got a question for you. Should we only pray for God's mercy on the terrorists? God, bring them to repentance. Have mercy on them. Save their souls. Stop this terror. Or should we pray for judgment? Is it right for Christians to pray for judgment? Lord, bring your judgment on them. Bring your vengeance on them. Strike them down. Or do we pray for both? If they won't repent, strike them down. It was a few years ago that Phil Robertson was on Sean Hannity, I think, and he said when it came to Islamic terrorists that there were two choices, convert them or kill them. You think, what? Well, it sounds a little harsh, but what he was saying was we try to convert them to the true faith and away from their own violent ideology. Otherwise, we're at war with them. That's what he meant, kill them, spoken in typical Phil Robertson Duck Dynasty terms. But is it right to pray, God, bring judgment, God, bring vengeance? Or is that only for God to do, and our only prayer is to pray for mercy? Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. Where do you land on that? 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Okay, according to this report on CBS News from London, CBS News confirmed about the terrorist, Salman Abedi, was known to British authorities prior to the attack. He's 22 years old. He blew himself up to kill children, to kill women, to kill men, to kill these people attending a concert as they were leaving. He blew himself up. And you think of the panic as parents are trying to find out, is my kid okay? Is my kid okay? That there are children as young as 8 years old. I posted on Facebook earlier today the picture of an eight-year-old girl who was at the concert, leaving, obviously, with family and killed. Others terribly maimed. And you realize these kind of scars, they last for life. These last for life. And you're not just talking about, you know, we forget the news in a few days. We go on to the latest thing. Maybe just, you know, something else gets our attention, sports world, or stock market, or selling a house, or kid graduating from school, just normal life. We're talking about wounds that will last a lifetime, people bruised and scarred that need the mercy of God and the redemptive love of God. And yes, there are Muslims around the world that see these things and grieve and say, this is not our faith. This is not what we believe. But tragically, there is an interpretation of the Quran based on the life of Muhammad and Islamic tradition that justifies acts of terror against the unbelievers. And somehow, even this eight-year-old girl and the others there, they qualify as the unbelievers. After all, they were at a worldly concert, so they are unbelievers. Boy, oh boy. What kind of sickness, what kind of demented, demonic mentality would cause someone to act like this? So President Trump is in Saudi Arabia earlier this week and, yeah, treated like the most royal guest you could imagine. And I'm sure the Saudis know how to do it in that regard. Signs an arms deal over $100 billion in arms for Saudi Arabia. And delivers a speech in the presence of about 50 Islamic leaders, leaders of different Islamic nations. And I wrote about it. You can read my article on our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. But his speech there was significant for at least four different reasons. So you can read my article, The Importance of Trump's Saudi Arabia Speech Denouncing Islamic Terrorism. Remember, this is in Saudi Arabia. This is like the holy ground of Islam, where the cities of Mecca and Medina are, where Muslims from around the world make the pilgrimage there every year to the city of Mecca. And there are places in Saudi Arabia that you cannot go, you cannot enter if you're not a Muslim. So this, as I say, in many ways is holy ground. The fact that we had American troops and have American troops stationed in Saudi Arabia is an insult to some Muslims, and they feel it is a defiling of the holy ground. So President Trump does deliver a speech. On the one hand, he speaks of Islam as a great world faith. And obviously, in a setting like that, you would expect nothing less. And if you just look at it in terms of the great world religions, you know, your three monotheistic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, I would expect him to say something like that. Even if he were a committed Christian who knew the Lord, he would speak respectfully about Islam in general. But here's what's significant. He mentioned terror or terrorism 30 times in his speech. 30 times. You can contrast that with President Obama's speech in Cairo, and call it famous or infamous, depending on your perspective, in 2009, where he apologized to the Muslim world for the sins of American colonialism and those kinds of things, and quoted the Quran in a way which is actually very misleading. It's commonly quoted like that, but actually very misleading. And never mentioned terrorism at all. Not once. Not once. President Trump actually spoke of, here, quote, the crisis of Islamist extremism and the Islamist terror groups it inspires. He said that twice in the midst of speaking of terrorism or terror 30 times. And he said to fight against this, it means, quote, standing together against the murder of innocent Muslims, the oppression of women, the persecution of Jews, and the slaughter of Christians. And think of this. Think of this for a minute. He's there in Saudi Arabia where many of the people hate the Jews and think evil of the Jews and believe the worst about the Jewish people and the worst about the Israeli, quote, occupation. And yet he says we must stand together against the murder of innocent Muslims, puts that first. The oppression of women. Whoa, women are not exactly equal in Saudi Arabia. The persecution of Jews and the slaughter of Christians. And he called on the Muslim leaders to drive out the terrorists. Are you ready? Quote, from your places of worship, your communities, your holy land, and this earth. In other words, these terrorists are currently in some of your mosques, and you need to drive them out. I mean, to say this, this takes some chutzpah to say. And then he announced the founding of a new global center for combating extremist ideology located right here in the central part of the Islamic world. This groundbreaking new center represents a clear declaration that Muslim-majority countries must take the lead in combating radicalization. So he didn't just say extremist ideology. Okay, what does that mean? That's ambiguous. Who knows exactly what he's saying? But he said combating radicalization. That means people taking the teachings of the Quran in a radical way that ends up killing innocent men, women, and children in the name of Allah. Now, some say that's the only true Islam there is, and others say, no, the only true Islam is peaceful Islam. I say the truth is in the middle, that there is a valid expression of Islam that is peaceful, and there is a valid expression of Islam that is violent. When I say valid, I mean based on the Islamic sources. In other words, I don't believe that all Muslims who denounce ISIS, who denounce Al-Qaeda, who denounce these terrorist acts, I don't believe that all Muslims who do these things are just hypocrites and they're liars and they're deceiving you about the true nature of Islam. From all of my study and understanding and the Muslims I've interacted with and studied with back when I was taking Arabic classes in college and grad school in particular, that there are many who believe that you advance the Islamic teaching the same way we advance the gospel through teaching, through instructing, through education, and that if there's a war, just like if America was attacked by another country, we'd fight back. So there's justification for war, but not justification for terrorism or advancing the faith by the sword. Now, those that say no, Islam always advances by the sword, and there's a pattern of that in history right up until this day. That's why it's so violent. I believe both expressions of Islam are found historically and in the sources. So the question is, can a country like Saudi Arabia really stand against radicalization when In point of fact, she, a country like that, espouses Wahhabi Islam, which is a fundamentalist Islam, which gives birth to an Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. So some would say that the very ideology of Saudi Arabia is an ideology that is radical itself. We shall see. We shall see if this is another example of say, the foxes controlling, what is it, the chicken coop or whatever the expression is. But it's significant that President Trump said these things. There's some other things in his speech we'll come to, significant things in his speech in Israel and his interaction with Israeli and Palestinian leaders. But again, we grieve over the horrific, horrific terror attack in Manchester yesterday.
It's fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is why I'm pleased the president's overseas working on going on offense against ISIS. Let's fight them over there instead of here. And that's why we need to have a comprehensive strategy to go on offense against ISIS. And I think the president is doing a great job of getting our Sunni Arab allies in the Gulf to help us do just that.
Again, that was the voice of Paul Ryan. This is the voice of Michael Brown, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to open up the phone lines now. If you have questions of any kind, completely unrelated to what we're talking about today, in a little while, we're going to open up the phone lines more widely to discuss whatever is on your mind to talk about. I won't be taking calls on Friday. I am just going to be answering email questions on Friday. So if you would have called on a Friday with a random question or comment or want to challenge me on something, today's a great day to do that. But once we get through some things I do want to talk about, 866-348-7884. Geert Wilders was not so happy with Donald Trump's speech in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. Why? Well, he says that Islam itself is the problem. His words, Islam is the problem. We can only deal with the threat if we first face the truth, which might not be too politically correct, but still is the truth. And that is that Islam, and not Islamism or radical Islam, but Islam is an evil ideology like communism or fascism that has no place in a free society. At the end of the day, it will replace us and we will lose our freedom. He said, if we don't act today, we cease to exist in the future. He appreciated Trump recognizing the global fight between good and evil. But he said, it's not that we have two different kinds of Islam. He said, I acknowledge the fact that we have two kinds of people. There are moderate Muslims and non-moderate Muslims. But there is really only one Islam. And this is the Islam of the life of Muhammad, of the Quran, of the Hadiths, of the Sunnah. This is not a battle between different faiths, different sects, or different civilizations. He said this is a battle, Donald Trump said this is a battle between barbaric criminals who seek to obliterate human life and decent people of all religions who seek to protect it. Wilders says, no, it's impossible for the ideology of Islam to assimilate in a free society. That's a debate that we will continue to have and something that we will continue to discuss. And I personally get blasted by critics on both sides. I get blasted by critics who, on the one hand, say there's no such thing as radical Islam. This is just Islam, period. All Islam is violent like this. All Islam is oppressive like this. All Islam gives birth to terror like this, period. End of subject. Then I have others who say, this is not Islam. Acts of terror like this, that's not Islam. It has nothing to do with Islam. Again, I believe that there is an Islam that is more peaceful and there is an Islam that tends to violence and that both are found in the sources and both are found in history. But as I said, that's a debate that we can save for another day. Back to the president's speech in Saudi Arabia, he identified Iran as the enemy. I mean, this is big. He singled out Iran in front of these 50 Muslim leaders as the enemy, linking Iran directly and repeatedly to Islamic terrorism. Now, certainly, Saudi Arabia and Iran are arch enemies. Some of the civil war in Yemen, some of the civil war in Syria, was really underwritten to a certain extent by the Saudis on the one hand, representing Sunni Islam, the majority Islam, and the Iranians, on the other hand, representing Shia Islam, which is the minority Islam. But let's remember, though, that the majority of Iraqi Muslims are Shiites, and they do not embrace the full ideology of the Iranian terror regime. So this is not so much a battle between Sunnis and Shias, although in that environment, in Sunni Saudi Arabia, Donald Trump talking about Iran as the enemy, that it's going to get a warm hearing there. But look at what he said. He called it the government that gives terrorists safe harbor, financial backing, and the social standing needed for recruitment. He labeled it a regime that is responsible for so much instability in the region. He stated that from Lebanon to Iraq to Yemen, Iran funds, arms, and trains terrorists, militias, and other extremist groups that spread destruction and chaos across the region. He said for decades, Iran has fueled the fires of sectarian conflict and terror. He said it's a government that speaks openly of mass murder, vowing the destruction of Israel, death to America, and ruin for many leaders and nations in this room. That also was highly significant. Third, the president put Hamas and Hezbollah in the same category as ISIS and Al-Qaeda. He said the true toll of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, Hamas, and so many others must be counted not only in the number of dead, it must also be counted in generations of vanished dreams. Now, there were critics. I was reading one critic quoted by CNN. Of course, they just got people critical of Trump's speech, including a professor from Iran. What's he going to say? Oh, wonderful that the president bashed us in front of 50 Muslim leaders. But they quote a Lebanese professor, CNN does, who pointed out that Trump equated Hezbollah, a Lebanese political and military group made up mostly of Shia Muslims, with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Hezbollah was conceived in the early 1980s primarily to fight against Israeli occupation in southern Lebanon. So the professor, Lebanese professor, said this is irresponsible on many levels. With Israeli rhetoric increasing against Lebanon, this does not bode well. The Lebanese will not put too much stock in yet another grand speech, but they will keep an eye out for Trump's position towards Israel's threats against Lebanon and any shift in U.S. policy towards Syria. And for Trump to say, look, you can call Hamas and Hezbollah freedom fighters against the Israeli occupation. That's your rhetoric. He said, we call them terrorists. And he did say, fourth, that terrorists do not worship God. They worship death. So here he got a little theological. And to quote again, this is a battle between barbaric criminals who seek to obliterate human life and decent people of all religions who seek to protect it. This is a battle between good and evil. We shall see what the Muslim world does. I remember years back when Louis Farrakhan was asked to renounce acts of Islamic terror. And he said, we renounce all acts of terror, be they Christian, Muslim, Jewish, whatever. That's not what he was asked to do. And his very answer said that he was not willing to do that. And I've seen the same with the Palestinian Authority. We renounce all acts of terror, be they acts by Palestinians or acts by Israelis. Well, he wasn't asked to do that. He was asked specifically to renounce and denounce an act of Islamic terror carried out by Palestinians against Israel. So in the same way, if you came to me, if God forbid some professing Christian killed an abortion doctor in the name of Jesus, and here and there it's happened tragically, I immediately denounce it. I renounce it. It has nothing to do with Jesus, nothing to do with the gospel, nothing to do with being pro-life. It's ugly. It's I don't care what the motivation was. It's reprehensible and it's wrong, period. End of subject. We're pro-life. We don't go kill someone. We don't go murder someone. No matter what they've done, we don't just go take the law in our own hands and murder that person. I can do that categorically. I don't need to say, and we also denounce liberal acts of terror and Islamic acts of terror. No, so we shall see how much the Muslim world now will stand with President Trump and say we will work together against terrorism in the name of Allah. We will root it out of our mosques. We will work with you in security. We shall see.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown coming your way live from Orlando, Florida. So let me highlight this again in dealing with the issue of terrorism, all right? It is important to name it and identify it. Radical Islamic terrorism or Islamic terrorism. And not just to talk about violent extremism as the Obama administration did, as candidate and formerly Secretary of State Hillary Clinton did, as others have done in recent years. Well, we don't want to alienate our Muslim friends. We don't want to alienate peace-loving Muslims. Well, the fact is, you're dealing with an ideology. You're dealing with a mindset. You are dealing with something that radicalizes people. I was just reading a report that a suspect has just been was brought into custody earlier in conjunction with the Manchester, England bombings. And according to the report, when he was brought into custody, he was obviously not the suicide bomber himself, but someone that may have cooperated in the attack or helped with the attack, that as he was brought into custody, he was smiling. You think, what kind of human being could smile? Surely he's read the reports. Surely they knew what was going on. Surely they knew the damage that would be done. Surely they knew there would be young people attending the concert. Surely this was their very target. He must have read the reports of families in a frenzy trying to find out, is their child okay? People there searching for others, you know, running out, screaming, and you know, bloody messes, and who's alive and who's not alive. 22 killed, almost 120 wounded. Who knows if all of them will make it? Who knows what their state will be for life? And then the states of the families. Who would be smiling? Someone who is so demonically brainwashed, who so believes that the world around them is evil and polluting and destructive, that all these actions are somehow right. Look, it's ugly enough if, say, a Palestinian terrorist kills an Israeli soldier because they believe this Israeli soldier is part of an occupation that is fighting against them, and this is war, and this is a soldier, so they target that person, maybe a 19-year-old Israeli kid, and they kill him in cold blood. That's evil enough. That's ugly enough. But they would say, hey, this is war, and that's a soldier. So that's evil. That's ugly. But how do you describe it when you're intentionally killing children, teenagers? And what justification? So you say, well, Mike, that's the whole thing. Christianity says the world is evil. Christianity says the whole world's under control of the evil one, and the God of this world has blinded the minds of those who don't believe, and unbelievers are of their father, the devil, and the world lives in darkness. Yeah, and what's the answer? Love. The answer is follow the example of Jesus. The answer is, if you believe the world is dark, go shine light in it. Don't kill the people in the dark. Go shine light in the dark. The reality is that Jesus came to save men's lives, not to destroy men's lives. That he did not die as a warrior in battle. That he did not behead his enemies. But rather, he laid down his life willingly, sacrificially, so that we could be forgiven, that we could receive eternal life. So we might look at the world as evil and sinful. Therefore, we reach out with love and compassion and a helping hand and forgiveness. The radical Muslim reaches out with a sword and kills people. So we must address the ideology. It's not only a matter of keeping terrorists out of our country. It's a matter of addressing the ideology. We come back, I want to focus on President Trump in Israel.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown coming your way from Orlando, Florida. So tonight, there is a special airing of a CBN documentary in our hands celebrating the reunification of Jerusalem 50 years after the Six-Day War in 1967. I was given a private showing, sent a link to watch the film in advance. I was so impressed with it that I gave a strong endorsement and even helped promote it via email and social media. That's happening tonight. If you don't have your tickets yet, go to inourhands1967.com. Inourhands1967 is the website. And I just heard from someone involved with this that the response has been tremendous, and there may even have to be an encore performance to open up more venues next week for people that don't get to see it. But be that as it may, President Trump timed his visit to the Middle East, obviously, to coordinate with this. And I want to say again, I am not here as a defender of the president. I am not here as his defender in chief. I am not here to justify everything he does. I wish he did certain things differently. I feel there could be much more smooth sailing if not for things he's done and ways he's presented himself since he's been president. At the same time, I believe the attack against him has been over the top. For example, there's an op-ed on CNN.com saying that the Saudis love Melania Trump because she's a picture of submission. Yeah, they really like her because she is a picture of female submission to men, and that's why they like her. Actually, I've been reading some reports where she's getting rave reviews, not just for her outfits. And by the way, she didn't cover her head with a headscarf, nor did Ivanka Trump cover her head with a headscarf in Saudi Arabia. So they did make a statement with that. But people have been praising, you know, who thinks of this in terms of the presidential side, but obviously the world watches this, you know, the outfits that she's worn and the way that she's conducted herself and her graciousness or gracefulness or whatever you want to call it, the way she's interacted with other women in these countries, Middle Eastern countries and Israel, that she's been getting these rave reviews. No, that's not it. The reality is that she just is a picture of a submissive woman and wife. Whatever Melania is, I don't picture her as just saying, "Yes, Mr. President Trump, whatever you say, I'll do. Just snap your fingers and I'll jump at that. Yes, sir, you're the boss." Somehow, I don't get that impression. But I want to speak well of what the president is doing. Don't flip, "Oh, you're just offending the president." No, look, if I differ, I differ. And when he does something worthy of praise, I'm going to praise him. And the same way as with President Obama. If I did speak of him, it was normally critically because I took issue. But when he did something I liked, I commended him for it. So again, kudos to President Trump for delivering that speech in Saudi Arabia and speaking about terrorism and then directly relating it to Islam and even saying it's in some of your houses of worship, you've got to drive it out. I believe that is significant. We shall see how far it goes. We shall see how far these Islamic nations have the ability to renounce and denounce terrorism in the name of Islam. We'll see how far they're able to go. But I think it's a good, positive step for sure. So in Israel, timed with the 50th anniversary of the Six-Day War, 1967, President Trump goes to the Kotel, the Western Wall, known as the Wailing Wall, but Jews don't refer to it as the Wailing Wall. We refer to it, those on the outside refer to it as the Wailing Wall, but Jews don't refer to it as the Wailing Wall, just the Wall or the Kotel in Israel. And he prayed there. You say, "Well, yeah, others have done that. Other presidents have done it." Yeah, but he's the first sitting president to do that. Somehow I didn't realize that until I read it. He's the first sitting president So not just going as a candidate and not going after being a president, the first sitting president to go pray at the wall. And remember, his son-in-law Jared is an Orthodox, you'd say modern Orthodox, a kind of left-wing Orthodox. His daughter Ivanka converted to Judaism when they got married. So that means his grandkids are considered Jewish. So this is not something that foreign to him. He must have worked with Jewish people in New York for many, many years and considers himself a strong friend of Israel. Visited Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum in Israel, which is powerful and intense to visit. Spoke clearly to Israeli leaders about never again. And from what I understand, also reiterated to Mahmoud Abbas that the Palestinian Authority cannot sponsor terror. Look, the fact of the matter is, if you are a Palestinian terrorist, you blow yourself up, you may be born and raised in Bethlehem, and you're able to blow yourself up and kill Israeli children and women and men, your family will get supported for life by the Palestinian Authority. If you go to prison for a terrorist attack and you're in prison, you'll get a salary and your family will benefit from that. That is sponsoring terror. And Palestinian Media Watch reports this. This was posted yesterday on palwatch.org, Palestinian Media Watch. As Trump meets Abbas in Bethlehem, the PA names squares after murderers. So there are two squares that were just named. This is common, Palestinian Authority naming elementary schools after mass murderous terrorists, naming squares, streets. You say, no. See, this is like us celebrating George Washington fighting against the British. You see, these are freedom fighters. These are terrorist murderers. Terrorist murderers. You're not talking about in the midst of a war where you're shooting back and forth at each other and soldiers die. You're talking about kidnapping people and killing them. You're talking about shooting people on a bus, civilians. You're talking about blowing up a building with children on the inside, among others. That's what you're talking about. And this still gets celebrated. So the report on PalWatch.org says, in the weeks leading up to his meeting with U.S. President Trump, PA Chairman Abbas has done his best to convince Trump and the world that the PA desires peace with Israel. But words are one thing and actions are another. While Abbas has been talking about peace, the Palestinian Authority has named two squares after terrorist murderers behind Trump's back, the Karim Yunis Square in Jenin and the Maher Yunis Square in Tulkarem. Karim and Maher Yunis are two Israeli Arab cousins who kidnapped and murdered Israeli soldier Avraham Bromberg in 1980. They're each serving a 40-year sentence for this crime. In this way, Abbas's deception continues. Regardless of Trump's visit, the PA carries on its policy of honoring terrorist murders by naming streets, squares, and schools after them. While Abbas assures Trump in Bethlehem that there is a genuine Palestinian desire for peace, Palestinians in Jenin and Tulkarem will gather in squares newly named after terrorist murderers. I mean, think of that. You're going to celebrate this square named after a terrorist, named after a murderer. You're going to celebrate that while the president of your country or of your territory is telling President Trump, "Oh, we want peace and we're working towards peace and raising our children in an environment of peace." Every two, three years. There's been a conference in Israel called Christ at the Checkpoint. It is largely sponsored by Palestinian Christians, but other international Christians. And it's a conference to talk about, okay, what's happening, the Israeli occupation, the Palestinians and Israelis, and what should a Christian response be, and Palestinians are suffering under the Israelis, and how should we look at it. And some of my friends have been involved in the conference. Others just said it's not worth it. It's too much of a hit piece against Israel, just designed to make Israel look bad, and it's it's not worth attending because there's going to be a spin put on it. So I was asked a couple years back, would I speak at the Christ at the Checkpoint conference? And I said in a heartbeat. Now, bear in mind, I had friends telling me, we don't recommend you do it because of the way it'll get spun with media and reporting and things like that. But as far as I'm concerned, unless the Lord tells me not to, if that door is opened, I want to walk through it. And we have enough media outlets of our own through radio and social media and articles that I can get out an accurate, truthful message. But I was asked if I would speak on the persecution of Jews by professing Christians through the centuries. And I understood the intent, and I appreciated it. The intent was, let the Palestinian Christians also realize how much the Jewish people have suffered through the years, because you just look at them as the occupier, the evil occupier, or something like that. This will give a different perspective. I said, sure, I'll speak on that, but I'd like to speak on another topic as well. I never heard back. I'll tell you what that topic was when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown coming away live from Orlando, Florida. Hey, for all of you who prayed for me yesterday, I posted a prayer request on our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page and on my Twitter feed, which is Dr. Michael L. Brown, Dr. Michael L. Brown on Twitter. Posted a request for prayer because I was recording TV shows for God TV for my Word on Fire broadcast all day yesterday, and there was great grace on me and on the team. I think we recorded a lot of really excellent programs. So for those of you who don't know, we have three TV programs right now. In addition to the Line of Fire broadcast, and let me tell you one other thing. If you don't know, there's an app now for your iPhone or your iPad, the Line of Fire app, where you can download this. Just search for the Line of Fire and with my name, Michael Brown, and you will see the app. It's free, of course. You can listen to this broadcast anywhere where you have a phone signal. You can listen live. It's a great app. It is super user-friendly, and it's ready for your iPhone's Line of Fire app, so you can listen to this broadcast freely and then get the archives as well right with this app. But if you didn't know, we also have three TV programs. We take our Friday broadcast, you've got questions, we've got answers, and we take some of the best of that, and we then enhance it with some special video features. And that airs Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock on NRB TV. If you have DirecTV, if that's how you have your cable, your satellite, whatever it is, DirecTV, you can watch it there on Wednesday nights at 7. So that's the Line of Fire made for TV. And we've gotten great shows so far with great calls and excellent interaction. And it's been rich, and we're really blessed by that. And there are other ways you can watch it. Just go to NRB TV's website for more info. Now we have two shows on God TV. This is also on DirecTV, but airs around the world as well. In fact, God TV has far more viewers outside the United States than in the United States. So it's a great opportunity for us to reach out around the world. We have a daily show, 5 minutes a day, and it's called Ask Me Anything, where I respond to questions that viewers send in from God TV. We're getting great responses to that, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And then Sundays at 6:30 in the evening. So a great time to watch preaching. I'm preaching the gospel, preaching the word. It's called Word on Fire, preaching with passion, with conviction, rocking the boat, being politically and religiously incorrect, but hopefully true to God and his word. You can watch that on God TV. So three TV shows we have, and I was in Orlando to record those TV shows yesterday and after the show today. Fly up to D.C., where I'll be speaking for the Family Research Council Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Conference. Should be a terrific conference. I'll be coming your way live from D.C., God willing, in the next couple of days. All right, so back to Christ at the Checkpoint Conference. I was asked to speak a couple of years ago, would I be willing to speak, and would I take the subject of the persecution of the Jewish people by the church through the centuries. Again, this is a conference held in Bethlehem. It is sponsored by Palestinian Christians there, working with Christians from other parts of the world. And the criticism against it has been that it presents a slanted view of Israel. It makes Israel look like the evil presence there, that it's unbalanced in its theology. And they would say, no, we need to bring attention to these issues because our friends of Israel don't know our suffering, etc. So some of my friends have participated and spoken. Others have said they won't because it's just going to be used propagandistically against our side. When I was asked, I said, sure, I'll do it, but I want another session. I want another session. If you have me in, I also want to be able to speak on radical Islam, the elephant in the room. And I never heard back. Now, I did have one of the leaders from the conference on the air with me, maybe a year and a half ago. Maybe it's closer to 2 years ago now, maybe even longer. And I said, if invited, I'd like to speak on that. And it seemed to be a positive response then, but I've never heard anything. And I don't know if they're having another conference. If it's scheduled, I don't know about it. I certainly haven't heard about it or been invited to speak at it. But you see, that's the real issue. That's the great issue. The enemy to peace, the enemy to peace in the Middle East is not Israel. The enemy to peace in the Middle East is radical Islam. That is the enemy to peace. The reason that the Palestinians are suffering is not because of evil Israel. Oh, it doesn't mean everything Israel does is good and right. It means that radical Muslim leadership has not been willing to make peace with Israel through the decades. It means that a security barrier, mainly a fence, but at times a wall, like in parts of Bethlehem, that is there to keep terrorists out, to keep murderers out, and the wall, especially to keep snipers from sniping. And if the Palestinian Authority and Hamas on the other side in Gaza Strip, if they put down their radical ideologies, if they stopped fostering and abetting and encouraging terrorism in various ways and stopped supporting it, funding it, then you wouldn't have to have the security barrier, because the Palestinians, the leaders, would be working with Israeli leaders for security. I mean, they do a little now, but they'd be doing it extensively. And the ideology would be addressed. The ideology would be addressed. That is what is so critical. The ideology must be addressed, and therefore it must be named. And that's why I'm glad that President Trump is naming it directly. And although I have been disappointed that thus far the president has drawn back from his promise, pledge to move our embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. There's still time to do it, but I'm disappointed that there seems to be a drawing back from it. I am pleased that he is winning the confidence of the Israelis and building bridges with the Muslim world. Listen, if you can build a bridge to dialogue with your enemy so that they put the sword down, isn't that better than provoking your enemy so they try to kill you with the sword? If you have the option of working out some differences so that you can work together versus always being at war with each other, as long as you don't compromise reality and compromise truth and compromise convictions and values, I say it's a good thing to do. But we shall see. We shall see. All right, friends, if you haven't read my article on the significance of the president's speech in Saudi Arabia, go to my website now, askdrbrown.org. And when you're there, be sure to sign up for my emails. If you don't get my emails, what are you waiting for? Some of you have listened for years and you still don't get them. This way you won't miss a single article. You won't miss my latest videos, which include What is the Doctrine of Demons? And a video debate with an ultra-Orthodox rabbi. You won't miss any of these announcements. You'll be the first to know and stay in touch with us. And I've got a free ebook. I want to send you an amazing free ebook when you sign up to join us right at askdrbrown.org. live from Orlando, Florida. Boy, another terrorist attack. Donald Trump in the Middle East. A lot to talk about. Also, you've got questions. We've got answers. We'll do it all today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for joining us today. On the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Okay, any question you want to ask me of any kind, like we normally do on Friday, you've got questions, we've got answers. Let's do that today. Any question of any kind is now not off limits, but within limits. Is that not off limits, on limits? That doesn't make sense. There are no limits. Just got to be acceptable for Christian radio, 866-348-7884. As we look around the world, as we see the latest horror of Islamic terrorism, as we see Donald Trump working for peace in the Middle East, what I'm reminded of is something very simple, very simple. We've got to preach the gospel of Jesus. And we've got to press into God in prayer, because otherwise there is no hope. And even though I would love to see a peace treaty between Israel and the Palestinians for the good of all those involved, I deeply question how long-lasting it would be for two reasons. One, ideologically, will Muslims accept Israeli presence in the Middle East? Will they accept Jews living in land that was once controlled by Islam? That is highly debatable. That's number one. Number two, does the Bible speak to this? Now, I don't want to base political decisions on interpretation of Scripture for future events. One major reason being that it's very easy to misinterpret the Bible when it comes to future events, that many, many times we can think this is going to happen now, or these passages are applying to this. And when it comes to future events, oftentimes we're wrong. But as far as I can tell, if there is a comprehensive peace in the Middle East to the point of Israel, quote, dwelling without walls. And here you have a literal wall or security barrier that's been put up by Israel to keep terrorists out. If the walls literally came down, would it just lead to an ultimate conflict? In other words, would there be a final conflict? There would just be a false peace, and then sudden destruction would come. That's the way I see things, but who knows how long that would be or how long that would last. So, of course, you have to want to see peace and work towards it. But bottom line, the hope of the world is the gospel. The hope of the world is people coming into right relationship with God. As we see some of the moral and social craziness in America, as we see the craziness of radical Islam blowing up children and women and men, killing innocent people, as we see the evil and madness of this world, we must remind ourselves our message, our weapon is the gospel of Jesus. Our message, our weapon is not more violence. Oh, I'm not saying that America should not be involved in certain wars or we shouldn't have a military. I'm talking about, as followers of Jesus, our contribution outside of, say, serving as a policeman or someone being a soldier in an army. What can every one of us do? Preach the gospel, win the lost. That has never changed. We stand for pro-life, we stand for marriage, we stand for certain values, but we know ultimately that the greatest thing of all is for people to come to know Jesus and be disciples. And if we can do that, that's how we could make a lasting difference. Let's never take our eyes off the basics. Go and win the lost. Be a disciple, make disciples. Yeah.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Katie Hopkins is a British TV personality and newspaper columnist, and she's grieving over the terrorist attack yesterday. And she tweeted out, "Britain is sick. It is calling out for a medic. What will cure us? What action do we take? How can we stop the hurt?" Obviously, she spoke for a whole nation there. Obviously, she spoke for people around the world grieving and shocked at last night's terrorist attack. Again, if you didn't see, I posted on the S. Dr. Brown Facebook page the picture of an 8-year-old girl, one of the victims of the terrorist attack last night after an Ariana Grande concert. So when Katie Hopkins is saying Britain's calling out for a medic, I mean, it sounds like scripture to me. You know, who can heal us? Israel's sick and wounded. Who can heal the wounds? This was a cry of the prophets often in the Old Testament. But then she also said this. She said, 22 dead, number rising. Schofield, referring to something else there, don't you even dare. Do not be part of the problem. We need a final solution. And someone responded named Ash Sarkar. Katie Hopkins calling for a final solution after the Manchester tragedy because there hasn't been enough bloodshed already. Despicable. You assume she realized the word she was using when she said final solution? But final solution, that's what Hitler said we needed with the Jewish people. Final solution to wipe them out, exterminate them once and for all. What did she just use the words unthinkingly? Did she use it unthinkingly, saying that you know, this is we need something to solve the problems? Or did she do it saying we need to wipe out Muslims? Anyway. Just looking at this report here, I heard the name but wasn't familiar with her. But just looking online, English television personality, newspaper columnist, first came to notice in 2007 as a reality television contestant, and is now best known as a columnist for British newspapers, initially The Sun and later the Daily Mail website. The fact of the matter is, though, we are not just dealing with people. We are dealing with an ideology. We are dealing with a mindset that says the West is evil. The America is the great Satan. Israel is the little Satan. The European nations are evil. They're full of unbelief. They're full of immorality. They're full of carnality. And therefore, Muslims should wage war against them. Something that even adds more pain to the tragedy in England is that news reports that the parents of the suicide bomber were Libyan refugees who came to England to escape the Gaddafi regime in Libya. Think of that. The UK opens their borders to bring in refugees fleeing from the evil of the Gaddafi regime in Libya. They come to England, they have a place where they can raise their family in safety and get away from the insanity of Muammar Gaddafi. And what happens? Their son is radicalized, and I don't know more about the parents, how radical they were. The son is radicalized and now is going to slaughter people, blow them up, blow them to bits, maim and injure as many as he can in the name of Allah. What kind of payback is that? You see, you cannot deal with this as if you're just dealing with normal, rational thinking people. Logical. Well, why would you want to kill these people? No, the very fact that someone would blow themselves up in the name of religion and target victims like this, knowing they're going to be children and young people, that tells right there, you cannot reason with this person in a rational way. And there are spiritual strongholds, there is massive deception, and it must be exposed. And here's a problem. I don't have an article in front of me. I don't have an article in front of me. But in point of fact, I read a few years back, that British authorities were upset because they were not getting help from the Muslim community to help identify radical Muslims. In other words, there was more solidarity with Muslims, even the radicals. Well, we can't expose the radicals because we're fellow Muslims. There was more solidarity with being Muslim than with being British. You think, well, wait a second. It's not a matter of being British or being Muslim. It's about fighting terrorism. It's about combating terrorism. That's what it's all about. So, well, I don't care who you say you are. If the government came to me and said, Dr. Brown, we know that you have a lot of circulation and different born-again evangelical circles and things like that, and there are people who are claiming to be born-again Christians or followers of Jesus, and they are recruiting people for violent ideology. Could you help uproot them? Well, if we could help uproot them, of course we would. If we had connections that would help expose and uproot them, of course we would. And for sure, if I knew what they taught and preached, I'd get on the air and speak against it and expose it everywhere I knew how and write against it. But this has not been the case, and I don't think, I'm not speaking with assurance here, but I don't think we've had much more success in America. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong. Give me documentation if I'm wrong. But I don't think we've had much more success in America with Muslims saying, okay, we want to help expose radical Islam. We want to help expose this ideology because we renounce it. And we say it's not really Islam. So we want to help expose it. We want to expose it in mosques. We want to expose it in schools. We want to expose it in centers where it's being taught. We want to sever all ties with any radical groups around the world and separate ourselves from them and make that known. And let's work with the authorities. It's not a witch hunt against all Muslims. This is Muslims saying, we're going to prove that this is not real Islam and we're going to expose these imposters. That's how they look at it. Why not? That is the point of great concern. And that's what this reminds us of in England. Look, the train bombers, the equivalent of the 9/11 tragedy in America, the train bombers in England, they were raised in England. They were all of them, raised in good neighborhoods and with good education. And yet their embracing of a radical ideology and one that says it is good to inflict these acts of terror, that was something they embraced as native-born Brits with British accents and British education. So, friends, it's not just an issue of immigration. I'll say it again. It's an issue of ideology. It's an issue that must be confronted. And if you haven't read my articles on radical Islam, and where I explain why I use the term, take a few minutes to do so. I think you'll find it helpful. 866-348-7884 is the number to call if you need clarification. But go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And you can just type in Islam in the search engine, and that'll pull up a lot of articles. Or you can search for radical Islam, but you will read articles where I explain why I refer to radical Islam, why I believe it is a true expression of Islam, but not the only true expression of Islam, because of which I get blasted on both sides, some saying all Islam is evil, and others saying if it's evil like this, it's not Islam. But I don't write and I don't speak in such a way to avoid getting blasted. I do my best to speak the truth. And look, coming back to President Trump as he's in a historic, important visit to the Middle East, and he is acting as a statesman in his speeches and saying some things that are very important that need to be said and being warmly greeted, quite different than his reception by the media in America. If you hate the idea that he's our president, if it embarrasses you, if you're so upset you can't believe it, pray for the man. Pray for him. I urge people to pray for Barack Obama. I was grieved that he was our president. I felt there was so much that was wrong. I wanted to have the privilege of voting for our first African-American president, but I couldn't in good conscience. I wanted to have that privilege and join in something historic, but I couldn't in good conscience. So I specifically called for prayer. For years said, let's pray that he'll be the greatest president in American history. But I have grave concerns right now. You may have grave concerns about President Trump, but pray for him. Is that too much to ask? Not pray they'll drop dead. Pray for God's best. Pray that God will use him. He is our president after all. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I am going to change subjects, change gears right now, and go to the phones. Any question you want to ask me, anything you want to talk about, I've got a few other things in my heart I want to share with you as well. But we'll go to the phones, 866-348-7884. We'll start with Corey in Salem, Oregon. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. So I come from a Hebrew Roots movement. I started attending this Hebrew Roots population, per se, about 5 years ago, and was mesmerized in the idea that doing Torah in worship for Yeshua, and really got involved. And then I started realizing there was this critical spirit going on, and really got caught up inside of judgment and started realizing that I was becoming a person that I never wanted to be.
Mm.
And I've walked away since then and started attending a Christian church again. Tinkering with some worship leadership and some other counseling type stuff that I've been introduced to inside of this new environment that I'm at. But I still struggle with this one thing since being involved with the Hebrew Roots, and that is the Sabbath. Over the last 5 years, I attend Shabbats. I did the Shabbat on Saturdays. And I would gather with my brethren and sisters, and we would connect, and we would do midrash, and we would get inside of oneg, which is like food, and really getting together and just eating and fellowshipping on a weekly basis. And we called that our Shabbat of rest. And since walking away from that, I miss this element, but at the same time, I feel like there's a command to do the seventh day, but at the same time, the leadership inside of all the Christian environments that I was with previously 5 years ago and now being integrated back into, so well, I do my Sabbath on this day and I rest this way, and Jesus is the Sabbath. And I just struggle with that concept because I don't really have a clear understanding as to how that is. And I've been listening to your podcast for many years. I have a friend, actually he's a personal friend of yours, I believe. I'm not sure. He's talked about you quite a few. I'm going to leave his name out of this, but he gave me one of your books, and I read through it. But anyway, long spoken, I just struggle with not keeping the Sabbath, and I don't understand how the fourth commandment has been fulfilled with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping that you could help me with this.
Sure, surely. This is normally I don't take questions about the Sabbath on the air because we get asked about it so many times. We refer folks to our website where I've talked about it and taught about it. But this was a larger question, and so I wanted to address it today. First, I'm glad that you recognize some of the errors of the Hebrew Roots movement. I'm glad that you recognize what was happening to you most of all and were able to pull away from that, because it can be very destructive. And I've seen people completely backslide, renounce their faith in Jesus Yeshua entirely. because of that. And would you agree that God does not command Gentile Christians in the New Testament to be under all of the Sinai covenant? Would you agree to that?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be able to say that I agree or disagree because I don't know the scripture that says that, but I honestly I would love to say that I do agree, but I don't know exactly what that means. I've been
all right,
so
well,
indoctrinated.
Okay, so let me help you with that. Would you agree that you are not justified before God by observing the law of Moses?
Yes, I agree with that.
All right, good. All right, and certainly that's what Paul was addressing in Galatians, very, very strongly, and saying that you're cutting yourself off from the Messiah if you're relying on keeping the law to be justified. Do you believe that right now there should be a death penalty, say, for committing adultery or for breaking the Sabbath, that there should be a death penalty for that?
No, I don't believe that.
Okay. Well, that would be if we were under the Sinai covenant. Those were some of the requirements of the Sinai covenant. What about the fact that we can't offer animal sacrifices? Say, as Jewish people, we can't offer animal sacrifices because we don't have a standing temple. Would you say, well, Jesus fulfilled what the animal sacrifices were pointing to, so we look to his blood instead of to an animal sacrifice?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. All right. So in many of these ways, you are saying, okay, we are no longer under the Sinai covenant. In fact, we're under a new and better covenant. The Ten Commandments were part of the Sinai covenant. So the long and short answer to you, Corey, is this: that God gave the seventh-day Sabbath to Israel in a covenantal way as part of separating them from the nations. Did God sanctify the seventh day at creation? Yeah, you could argue that from Genesis 2, but he doesn't give a command to observe the Sabbath to a people in Scripture until we get to Exodus 16, and then it's part of the Ten Commandments, but it was part of a special covenant God made with Israel. When the gospel then went to the Gentile world, the requirements of the Sinai covenant were not put on them. The Gentiles were not expected to live like Jews. They were expected to turn from sin and live holy and godly lives. But, for example, they did not have a pattern of life where they were necessarily free to not work on the seventh day or to take on any of the other commandments. So we see throughout the rest of the New Testament that all of the other commandments find repetition. You know, don't worship idols and don't commit adultery and don't murder and things like that. Those are all stressed and emphasized, but there's no command to keep a seventh day. And although Paul's probably not talking about Sabbath observance in Romans 14, he does make it clear that for one person, every day is set aside to the Lord the same way. For another person, one day especially set aside to the Lord. Let everyone have their own conviction and don't judge another man's servant over this. And then Jesus says, come to me and find rest. So in that sense, Yeshua brings fulfillment to the meaning of it. In other words, just like he brings fulfillment to the meaning of the sacrificial system, he brings fulfillment to the meaning of Sabbath the same way, in that this is what it's ultimately pointing to. I cease from my own works, and I find this place of rest in God. And now the question is it good to still set aside one day? Should we set aside Saturday? Is it a command or simply a good thing? And through the centuries, many Christians said, well, Sunday celebrating the resurrection, this is now our day of worship and our day of rest. But I'd say this, Corey, it should be done in a more pronounced way. I personally, as a Jewish follower of Jesus, if I'm not out preaching, the seventh day Sabbath is my day of rest. But I believe that the church needs to take this, in general, more seriously. And I'll tell you what I mean on the other side of the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just tweeted out moments ago, radical Christianity says the world is evil and loves the unbelievers. Radical Islam says the world is evil and slaughters the unbelievers. Two very different faiths and two very different approaches to life in this world. This is Michael Brown, and you're listening to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm opening the phone lines the way I normally do on Friday. You've got questions. We've got answers. We spent considerable time earlier on the broadcast talking about the tragic terrorist attack in England yesterday, talking about the president's trip to the Middle East. You can listen to the full broadcast later today at thelineoffire.org, or you can subscribe by podcast and never miss a show in that regard. You can also read my relevant articles about the president's trip to the Middle East at askdrbrown.org. I posted a question earlier, 2 hours ago. Is it right to pray for God's judgment on Islamic terrorists, or do we only pray for mercy on their souls? 14% said yes, of course, it's right to pray for God's judgment. 20% said no, only mercy. 66% said pray for both. Pray for both. And I would say, yes, I would pray, God, put a stop to the terror, put a stop to the evil, and bring these people to repentance that they might find mercy on that day when they stand before you. But I'm all for seeing God strike them down to stop them. Here, if you knew there was a terrorist bomber about to blow people up like last night in England, and they're going to position themselves outside of this concert hall, and children and teens and parents and grandparents are going to be walking out together, and the police knew what he was about to do and can shoot him dead before he pulled the trigger, wouldn't that be a good thing to do? If you were there and could tackle him and pull his hand away from the trigger so that nobody was hurt, wouldn't that be a good thing to do? Well, certainly pray, God, stop him. Or if that's all you could do because you're not there, God, stop him. That's a good thing to do. Oh, best of all would be that he'd repent first and take the vest off and march into police and say, this is what I was about to do, and I'm willing to suffer the full sentence of the law because I found mercy from God. But I think, yeah, pray for both is the right approach. And by the way, before I go to the phones, I'm looking at a report on jihadwatch.org that says Trump switched Islamist terror to Islamic terror on purpose to defy the State Department. This is according to Brian Thomas. Now, when I quoted the speech, I quoted it as I saw the transcript, which said Islamist terror. And I'd be curious to know that the Arabic words that were used, Islamist versus Islamic, and how that's said differently in Arabic today. But according to this report by Brian Thomas, he says, I'm now completely certain that Donald Trump defied his own State Department and probably the Department of Defense while giving a speech in Riyadh. Trump switched out the deceptive word Islamist and switched in Islamic while reading his prepared speech from the teleprompter. And he's got a note, watch that struggle for yourself with the edited remarks as prepared on the screen. So you see the remarks as prepared, and then you hear what he says. I'm just looking at different quotes here from this. It mentions this as well. Donald Trump said, religious leaders must make this absolutely clear. Barbarism will deliver you no glory. Piety to evil will bring you no dignity. If you choose the path of terror, your life will be empty, your life will be brief, and your soul will be fully condemned. In other words, if you blow yourself up as a suicide bomber, you're going to hell, not to paradise. You say, well, President Trump didn't write the speech. Yeah, but he delivered. He delivered the speech. He did. And if, in fact, he went out of his way to say specifically Islamic versus Islamist, wow, that's strong. We'll be right back with your calls. Stay tuned.
Flame, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I had a meeting this morning with President Abbas and can tell you that the Palestinians are ready to reach for peace. I know you've heard it before. I am telling you, that's what I do. They are ready to reach for peace.
That is President Trump speaking from Israel, from the Middle East. And let me just say this. If he conducted himself at home the way he's been conducting himself abroad, yeah, he'd still have his constant attack from the liberal media, but it would lessen. It would lessen. If he was not tweeting out some things that he just ought not to be tweeting and saying things he ought not to be saying and focusing on being the president, it would be much better in every way. Here's a note, handwritten note signed by him and Melania after he visited Yad Vashem, the Israeli Holocaust Museum. It is a great honor to be here with all of my friends. So amazing, and will never forget! Exclamation point. Those are the kind of messages that we need from the president. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. I want to go back to a conversation I was having earlier in Salem, Oregon. Corey, are you still there?
I am, sir.
Great. Okay. We were talking about Christians and the Sabbath and the question of Jewish roots of the faith and what Christians should and shouldn't keep and observe and things like that. And when Paul says we're not under the law, what exactly does that mean? So let me give the argument for a seventh-day Sabbath observance that many would use. Seventh-day Adventists would agree with this, for example. They would say this: God sanctified the seventh day at creation. In Genesis, the second chapter, he sanctified it as holy. Even though he didn't command everyone to observe the Sabbath then, it's evident that that day was different than the rest. And then when he called Israel to himself as his own people, he gave them the seventh-day Sabbath as a major commandment. And Israel, of course, is supposed to be a light to the nations. This was not just part of the larger Sinai covenant. This was one of the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments are for all people. And we see in the prophetic books that at the end of the age in the Messianic Kingdom, or in the age to come in the Messianic Kingdom, that all nations will worship on the Sabbath, and therefore Christians, Gentile Christians, Christians of all backgrounds, should set apart the seventh day as the Sabbath. The argument against that would be, when the gospel went to the Gentile world, there is no New Testament commandment to observe a seventh-day Sabbath, that we are called to enter into a spiritual Sabbath rest where we cease from our own labors to receive forgiveness and receive forgiveness through what Jesus did. And out of that place of rest, we now walk in obedience, and that this is a matter for individuals and communities to work out. And everyone has to decide this for himself or for herself. And then a third view would be, no, Sunday has become the Sabbath. And the Catholic Church in the 4th century declared that the Sabbath was now changed. And others would say, well, based on what? Where does the New Testament ever say that the Sabbath was actually changed? So I reject the view that says that Sunday is the Christian Sabbath according to the New Testament. I do not see that supported in the New Testament. I reject the view that Seventh-day Sabbath observance is mandatory for all Christians, regardless of their background, Gentile and Jew alike, that it is mandatory for all, and that you're disobedient if you don't do that. Paul explicitly says in Colossians 2, writing to Gentile believers, don't let anyone put you under pressure in this regard when it comes to a Sabbath observance. And notice what he says about it here. He says this, so let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Messiah. So these things, the festivals, the holy days, new moons, food, drink, they are only shadows of the things to come. The reality is found in the Messiah. Therefore, don't let anyone judge you regarding this. And then Romans, the 14th chapter, Paul writes this. He says, one person esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. Now, I don't believe initially he was talking about Sabbath in this context, but in a community with both Jewish and Gentile believers, this question would certainly come up regarding the Sabbath. Paul says, he who observes the day observes it to the Lord, and he who does not observe the day to the Lord, he does not observe it. He who eats, eats to the Lord, for he gives God thanks, and he who does not eat to the Lord, he does not eat and give God thanks. For none of us lives to himself, and no one dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or we die, we are the Lord's. But why do you judge your brother? Why do you show contempt for your brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Messiah. So in that context, it seems clear that there is not a New Testament commandment for a specific Sabbath day for Christians. And that's why you have different people giving different answers. Do I think it's good to have that cycle of life with Sabbath rest? Yes. Do I think it's good for believers to have times of communal meals together and participation in a cycle of life together? Yes. Do I think that Messianic Jewish congregations sometimes do that better than churches? Yes. But I do not believe that there is a New Testament command for the seventh-day Sabbath, and it is not repeated anywhere in the New Testament. Therefore, I don't preach that there must be Seventh-day Sabbath observance. That's the best I can explain it in simplicity. And we have no evidence that I'm aware of, Corey, in early church history where all the Gentile believers kept the Seventh-day Sabbath. In fact, many did not understand why Jewish believers still did. Jewish believers still did because they thought, well, this is part of our covenant. It's part of our lifestyle, part of our heritage. Of course we do, but not for justification. So what is unclear to you in what I've just shared with you?
The phrase, the Commonwealth of Israel, is the one that really got me when I was in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of teachers use that as, because you are the Commonwealth of Israel, you are identified as Israel. Since you are identified as Israel, you should adhere to the Torah. And if you adhere to the Torah, it is an act of worship to Yahweh. And although if you may slip or you may not be able to adhere to the Torah, there's Yeshua that covers your sin and being not able to keep the Torah. So do your best. And where you fall short, Yeshua will save you and care for you and give you grace and mercy. And so that was where I was indoctrinated, and that's where I was, and that's where I still am, like, desensitizing myself from this thinking. Because I mean, I also didn't let you know that I did come from a Seventh-day Adventist background as well. So that was
put
into me as well.
Yeah.
So I came from Seventh-day Adventist, rebelled against the Seventh-day Adventist Church, came back to the church at 23, and that was in 2001, and then in 2012, I decided to go over to the Hebrew roots because people were talking about all this wonderful stuff. And I go, oh, yeah, the seventh day. Oh, yeah. And the way that was being presented was so mesmerizing, and I was getting into it. I put the kippah on my head. I put the tzitzit on my sides. I did the seventh
right. And even just to jump in that, you know, so wearing a kippah, wearing a yarmulke has nothing to do with the Bible. This is a later Jewish tradition. So people are getting into the soulish fixation with Jewishness and external. So here I've heard enough to diagnose the problem and to give you the solution, which is you need to meditate on what it means to be in the Messiah, that you need to look at the passages in the New Testament that talk about being in him, that your identity is not found in being a Jew or a Gentile, that your identity is not found in keeping certain outward observances. Your identity is found being in him as part of the family of God. And what Paul was speaking about in Ephesians 2 is the miracle that Jew and Gentile are now part of the larger family without Jews becoming Gentiles and Gentiles becoming Jews. And if you're unclear, read 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Paul says, were you called, meaning called to salvation, uncircumcised, don't become circumcised. Loud and clear, don't become circumcised. Do not try to become a Jew or take this on. This is the beauty of it now. Jew and Gentile together as one people, one family, without Jews becoming Gentiles and Gentiles becoming Jews. That is the larger commonwealth of Israel. Israel and the nations serving God, redeemed in the Messiah. Your identity is in Him, in Him, in Him.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. So glad to be with you today. I was talking to one of my colleagues in our ministry the other day. She and her husband were talking about how they were in the car together and they were listening to the Line of Fire, but there was static on the station. So instead, she just took out her cell phone and clicked on the Line of Fire app. Yes, now available for iPhones. Get it today. The Line of Fire, it's free. Line of Fire app. So search for Line of Fire with my name, Michael Brown. And she said just clicked on it and listened to a perfectly clear signal. So if you don't have the app, download it today for your iPhone. Explore it. It's got, well, great, great, very easy to use resources there for you. Let me just explain one more moment what I was saying to Corey, then I'm going to go back to the phones, 866-34-TRUTH, about your finding your identity in the Lord. Let's say that you were some attractive woman, but you didn't know the Lord, and you would wear really seductive outfits, and you'd feel this obligation as soon as you were going out with a guy to give yourself to him and things like that, and that was your identity, that you were available, that you were hot, you were this, you were that. And you always had to, you know, make yourself up a certain way. And then you get saved, and then you meet the man that's going to be your husband. And he says, you know, you're my wife. You get married, you're my wife. You're the love of my life. And you're a daughter of God. That's your identity. It's not how sexy you look. It's not how hot you are. It's that you're loved, that you're a daughter of God, that you're my bride, that I want to build a family with you. And you look at yourself totally differently. Sometimes we're striving, we're doing all these other things and putting on all these other things and all these externals to try to find an identity. Our real identity is found in being in Jesus, being in Yeshua. So a great thing to do is to read through Paul's letters and highlight every time it says, in him, in him, in him, in him. And make note of that, and then pray that over yourself and meditate on those scriptures so that your mindset and your identity is changed. 866-348-7884. Listen, I have to remind myself that my identity is found in being a child of God, not in being a radio host, not in preaching on TV, not in writing articles, not in traveling and speaking, not in writing books, not any of these other things. Oh yeah, debating rabbis, whatever. These are things I love to do in the service of the Lord, but my ultimate identity and the thing that matters most is not how productive I am or how many times this article was shared or how many people are listening to my radio show, but rather my primary sense of security and identity is I'm a child of God. I'm loved by the Father. And out of that, everything else flows. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Lexington, North Carolina. Gerald, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, Brother Brown, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, I can.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. As a fellow New Yorker speaking to another New Yorker, I want to make sure my voice is nice and clear. Isn't that nice? Well, listen, your last caller, you know, talking about Seventh-day Adventists and the law, you know, there is one time I was reading a commentary, a systematic theology from Ryrie, And he was bringing up the issues of law and grace, where does the law fit in, and that this has been something argued for millennia, you know, that kind of thing. And as we see it now in certain denominations, right? But, you know, there's something that he picked up on, and it's very true. And I'll just make reference to one verse, and that is in 1 Corinthians 9:21, okay? And it mentions about the law of Christ. The law of Christ. And the point is that we are now under the law of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there needs to be an understanding of that when we talk about the law of God, it's that, you know, and I agree with you, if I may say, that, you know, that there's a ceremonial law and, you know, and so forth, but then there's a moral law and so forth. And that from what I see is that God wants to live. Now, you help me if I'm wrong here, okay? Tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm not understanding this right. But that the true nature of God's law is to be lived out in the Spirit, the law of the Spirit of life. You know?
Yeah, now, let me just say this.
The law of Christ is not being mentioned enough that we are now under the law of Christ.
Right, so Paul says, 1 Corinthians 9, beginning of verse 20, when I was with the Jews, I lived like a Jew to bring the Jews to the Messiah. When I was with those who followed Jewish law, I too lived under that law. Even though I'm not subject to that law, I did this so I could bring to Messiah those who are under the law, meaning that there are other traditions and other customs in Jewish law that he was not under, but he was going to live by to be among his own people and to try to build a bridge. When I'm with the Gentiles who do not follow the Jewish law, I too live apart from that law, so I can bring them to Messiah, but I do not ignore the law of God. I obey the law of Christ. I am under the law of Messiah. So, the fact is, God has put moral requirements in our hearts. He has called us. We are commanded in the New Testament not to murder. We're commanded not to commit sexual immorality. We're commanded to live holy lives, but we do not do it externally. In other words, it's not a matter of laws being written on stone, and we affirm them, but we can't keep them because they're written on stone. Rather, they're written in our heart, and we're transformed by the Spirit. The thing I think it's important to remember, though, is that there are many commandments in the New Testament. Jesus says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. There are many commandments in the New Testament, and Paul quotes from one of them in Ephesians 6. It says, honor your children, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. So commandments themselves are good, but we must be empowered by the Spirit to keep them. We must be empowered by grace to keep them. So some people just have an attitude against law, Gerald, and you bring up a good point. Law is bad. No. Well, law, we'd have chaos. But God's law, the ultimate law that he calls us to live by, is the law of the Messiah. It is that which is expressed in the teaching of the New Testament, carrying out and fulfilling that which was written to Israel before and now given in such a way that everyone can live. And yes, it is by the Spirit. And I think we pay insufficient attention to the help of the Spirit and insufficient attention to the new life we are to live and say, well, we're not under the law. No, we're not under the Sinai covenant. But now we are under the Messiah's law, and by the grace of the Spirit, we live it out. Hey, we're out of time, but thank you, sir, for the call and the observation. Much appreciated. Hey, friends, if you have not been following my commentary on the president's trip to the Middle East, please go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and check out my latest articles. We've also got a range of videos on a number of different subjects, all posted on our digital library for you at AskDrBrown.org. When you're there, if you haven't signed up to get my emails yet, for whatever reason that you don't get my emails, sign up today at AskDrBrown.org, and I want to send you a free ebook, 7 Secrets of the Real Messiah. All right, back with you tomorrow, right here, same time, same place, on the Line of Fire. Change the world.